the headlines this hour. Top U.S. Republicans support President Trump's efforts to challenge presidential election results, despite the lack of evidence of significant fraud. Scuffles erupt in Peru where supporters of President Martin Vizcarra take to the streets to protest against his impeachment of Congress. The major markets rise for a second day in hopes of progress on a possible vaccine for COVID-19 that has battered the world economy. Thanks for joining us. In the U.S., top Republicans, including the Senate Majority Leader, have supported President Donald Trump's efforts to challenge election results.
And the courts are here to work through concerns. Our institutions are actually built for this. We have the system in place to consider concerns, and President Trump is 100% within his rights to look into allegations of irregularities and weigh his legal options.
McConnell added that he had met with Attorney General William Barr about the issue. Barr has already given federal prosecutors the green light to pursue allegations of voting irregularities across the U.S. That came after Trump's campaign unveiled a lawsuit against election officials in Pennsylvania, following similar suits in several other states. The campaign has, without providing any evidence, alleged that Pennsylvania's mail-in voting system lacked the transparency that in-person balloting had. Trump has said he lost the election to his Democratic rival Joe Biden due to fraud, but has offered no evidence for his claim.
The United States has not been so divided in recent memory as there are two people claiming to be president. The mainstream media rushed to accept Joe Biden's declaration of victory, even though he has an average lead of only 32,000 votes in three states in a vote which is not even finished counting yet. Donald Trump has also claimed victory prematurely. It appears half the country believes Biden is the president-elect, while the other half believes Trump is the president-elect. No one knows what will happen next, and many fear tensions could elevate into violence.
Joe Biden has won. Trump may contest it, but the evidence is there. There is no illegal things regarding vote. The system has worked, and it will continue. One man will not ruin this system for us. Joe Biden is now our president.
And one thing I want to add, it's not Republican versus Democrat. It's we are Americans.
American, special of our country.
Period.
But mail-in ballots were used in unprecedentedly massive numbers, and the vote's legality has been openly disputed for many months. It seems certain the courts will ultimately decide the legality of the vote, and maybe even who won, as in the year 2000, which caused massive political alienation, cultural division, and mistrust. The lack of trust is also because the U.S. election process is considered the worst of any of the core Western democracies. That's according to the Harvard-based Electoral Integrity Project, whose 2019 index ranked U.S. elections just 57th in the world. Pro-Biden corporate media is seemingly acting as if there is no dispute at all, while skeptical pro-Trump outlets insist this unique election must be vetted by the courts and that Trump must not concede before that process is finished.
I think he'll just give it up eventually. People will stop giving him airtime, stop giving him attention, and he'll just give up. He'll figure out another way to be in the news and all over the place.
Both sides appear to be bewildered by the stance of the other side, and both sides are certain of their own righteousness. With two presidents, many say the U.S. election could not have turned out worse, and the worst seems yet to come. Rami Mazahiri, Chicago.
Colin Campbell in Washington, D.C. says the lawsuit brought by President Trump's campaign against U.S. election officials is likely to be thrown out due to a lack of evidence.
A lot of these cases that he's filed so far, he hasn't had a very good track record with them. They've been thrown out because he doesn't have the evidence. A lot of these admissions or allegations are self-anecdotal. They are the They are the narratives of other people just trying to say that they've seen something when they may not have. And I think what judges are looking for is tangible evidence, concrete evidence that there's massive voter fraud here. What's in addition to this, even if there are cases of voter fraud, unless it's on a widespread, massive scale, the amount of votes that the former vice president has, the president's rival, Joe Biden, has, in comparison to what he has, it really wouldn't change the outcome. It would maybe be a few votes here and there. Even if it's 1,000 here and 1,000 there, it's not going to overturn the multiple thousands or tens of thousands that Biden has outdistanced the president collectively.
The UN has criticized the U.S. over a host of issues related to its human rights record. In a session dubbed Universal Periodic Review, the UN Human Rights Council raised the issues of police brutality, racial discrimination, and mistreatment of migrants in the U.S. under the administration of President Donald Trump. Several member states also called on the U.S. to reverse the decision to withdraw from the UN rights body and to end sanctions on members of the International Criminal Court. The council expressed hope that the next U.S. administration would work to roll back what it called Trump's harmful policies. All UN members undergo the review every 4 to 5 years. Monday marked Washington's third review since the year 2015. Political activist Life Malcolm says that the U.S. disregards international laws as well as UN recommendations on human rights.
In 2011, the United States, the UPR, had a review of the United States for similar things. They called it then systemic racism, and they mentioned the brutal tactics that the United States impose on African people here through their police force all the time. But the United States consistently disregards these recommendations by the United Nations and the UPR. So while it's good that the United Nations UPR makes these recommendations, what's clear is the United States is a dictatorship that rules without regard for law. I mean, it's interesting, this go around, they call it, you know, the United Nations and the UPR attempts to attribute what's occurring here now to the Trump administration. But as I just mentioned, in 2001, Donald John Trump wasn't the president, it was George W. Bush. In 2009 and in 2015, in 2011, I think I mentioned that year too, it was Barack Hussein Obama who was the president. And now this thing is happening with Trump. So it's not whoever's in the White House. It's the United States itself.
Scuffles have erupted in Peru's capital, Lima, where supporters of President Martin Vizcarra rallied to protest against his impeachment in Congress. Police in riot gear tried to push back angry protesters, gathering at the iconic site of the Plaza San Martin. The protesters shouted slogans to denounce the impeachment trial. Peruvian lawmakers voted overwhelmingly to remove the popular president over corruption allegations. Vizcarra said that he will accept the motion, but he categorically rejected accusations of taking bribes from companies that won public works contracts. The head of Congress is expected to assume power on Tuesday. Manuel Merino will remain in office until the end of the current term in July 2021. The presidential election will be held next year in April. Markets in Asia have rallied following news of progress in the development of a vaccine for COVID-19 that has battered the world economy. Tokyo, Hong Kong, Sydney, and Jakarta all rose more than 1% on Tuesday. Singapore and Manila surged over 3%. There were also modest gains in Seoul, Shanghai, and Wellington. The strong performance was led by companies including airlines, which have been hammered for most of the year by virus lockdowns. The gains in Asian markets followed the positive lead overnight from the U.S. and Europe. Hopes for an end to the pandemic has risen after a U.S. pharmaceutical giant and its German partner said Monday their vaccine was more than 90% effective in preventing infection. Political commentator Andrew Loewing believes that there is no guarantee that markets will continue to rise in the coming weeks following their latest gains in the wake of good news on a COVID vaccine.
For the market has been in the doldrums for too long, and everybody's waiting for some sort of good news. Let's not forget that this vaccine, even though it's a kind of breakthrough, is still 90%, not 100% effective. So it remains to be seen whether it's going to pass all the hurdles. And secondly, even if it has passed all the hurdles, it's a question of how many people are going to receive the vaccine, bearing in mind, first of all, to what extent the supply will be able to meet the global demand. And secondly, I think that the chances are that the vaccine will be geared towards protecting all the paramedics, you know, the nurses, the frontline medical staff. But nevertheless, it is a welcome news. And obviously, as I said, that the market has been waiting for something like this for a long time. But let's beware of too much euphoria. And then let's not, the market is only registered, you know, 1 or 2% maximum at the moment. So it's a kind of cautious optimism. But apart from the vaccine, there's also the question of the seeming to be the end of the U.S. presidential election, ending some of the uncertainty.
Taliban militants in Afghanistan have called on U.S. President-elect Joe Biden to stay committed to an agreement to withdraw American troops from the war-torn country. The Taliban said the agreement is the most effective tool to end the Afghan war. The militant group signed the deal with the Trump administration in February. The agreement sets the full U.S. withdrawal as a precondition for a Taliban ceasefire with the Afghan government. Washington has promised to pull all forces out of Afghanistan by May 2021, but NATO has ruled out an early exit, saying that it hinges on the security situation. Violence has surged there over the past months, despite the U.S. deal. Armenia's Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan says that he has reached an agreement with Russia and Azerbaijan to end the fighting over the disputed Nagorno-Karabakh region. Pashinyan says that he took the decision after deep analysis of the military situation. However, he said the move had been, quote, unbelievably painful. The announcement sparked outrage at the Armenian capital, Yerevan. Thousands there gathered outside of the government headquarters to call for Pashinyan's resignation. Groups of protesters also stormed the government headquarters and the parliament building. The ceasefire is being overlooked by some 2,000 Russian peacekeepers. The Azerbaijani president says Turkey will also be involved in implementing the truce. Three previous ceasefires failed to end the fighting between Azerbaijan and Armenia over Nagorno-Karabakh. Political commentator Pablo Gonzalez says that the agreement to end the war in the Nagorno-Karabakh region amounts to a military victory for Azerbaijan.
This ceasefire seems clearly like the end of the war with the victory of Azerbaijan with the support of Turkey. This ceasefire, if they what we know as the main points of these agreements is what Baku wanted. So they recovered big areas of the Karabakh region. It was their main goal. And now they allow the peacekeepers to be in the region. So for them, it's the perfect situation. Also, they will have now access since the by land to the Nakhichevan region. So it's something that they will never expect before. So they have one of the part, they have all the things that they wanted, and the other part, the part that lost, that is Armenia Artsakh, they need to sign that to don't lose more.
Moving on, thousands of Georgians have hit the streets of the capital Tbilisi for a second day to back opposition calls for a rerun of last month's parliamentary election. Police have detained some protesters. The opposition and protesters who defied a COVID-19 curfew claimed that the election was rigged. Police used water cannon outside of the Central Election Commission where protesters had gathered. There were also reports of police firing tear gas towards protesters. Police denied that report. During protests on Sunday, dozens of people were also injured. Britain's unemployment rate has risen in the third quarter of the year as the COVID-19 pandemic continues to hit the jobs market there. The UK's Office for National Statistics says that the unemployment rate jumped to 4.8% in the 3 months of September. It says a record high of 314,000 workers were made redundant in that period. The figure was up by 181,000 compared with the second quarter of the year. Finance Minister Rishi Sunak says that the figures underline the scale of the challenges that Britain is facing. The country has been forced to impose strict lockdown measures to contain the virus that has hit its economy hard. Fears have been raised about the global economic crisis caused by the coronavirus pandemic could trigger new security threats, potentially leading to World War III. Maybe in preparation for such a scenario, Britain's military is asking for the Treasury to enable long-term investments needed to modernize. Meanwhile, the UK is selling billions of pounds worth of arms, regardless of the human rights records of some of its customers. Bianca Rahimi has more.
The head of the UK Armed Forces has warned if current smaller conflicts escalate out of control, drawing in more countries and weapons, World War III might break out. In a Remembrance Day interview with Sky News, General Sir Nick Carter said the world is currently, quote, a very uncertain and anxious place.
We have to remember history might not repeat itself, but it has a rhythm. And if you look back at the last century, before both world wars, I think it was unarguable that there was escalation that led to the miscalculation, which ultimately led to war at a scale we would hopefully never see again.
General Carter says that the British Army will comprise 90,000 human soldiers and 30,000 robots by the 2030s. And aside from modernising and amplifying its own military, the UK is still the world's second largest arms exporter.
Military arms deals worth an estimated £39 billion were approved between 2008 and 2017, a third of which went to countries with abysmal human rights records.
But we have not seen any evidence of that. If we stop selling them the bombs, if we stop selling them the planes, that will have an impact on Saudi and on what Saudi can do in Yemen, because we are one of the main exporters of arms to Saudi Arabia, and frankly, we can't make bombs fast enough for them.
The UK currently has £11 billion worth of orders. So how does stockpiling and exporting arms factor into the UK's World War III game plan?
The UK government has spent hundreds of billions of pounds, large amounts of which have yet to be properly even accounted for, in response to the coronavirus crisis. And General Carter knows full well, I suspect, as do many others in government, that at some point a reckoning for this is going to come, and this money is going to have to be found somewhere, either through tax rises or more likely through departmental budget cuts. And that time is fast approaching, when indeed the British government, as indeed other governments, are going to have to start doing the mathematical reckoning for their spending. And so I think possibly what's the motive here for General Carter as head of the UK Armed Forces to remind yet again for the message that is constantly being put out by the think tanks and the media that support strong armed forces, that is that the world is a dangerous place.
The world is still reeling from the results of the presidential elections in the US, undisputedly the world's military heavyweight. And although Donald Trump's four-year term was the first without a new war since Eisenhower, his administration has allowed military voices to shout down those of experienced civil servants in the development of foreign policy. Funding cuts to non-defense federal agencies and many career civil servants resigning means policy planning is being entrusted invariably to those in uniform. Bianca Rahimi, London.
And that is for World News. Bye-bye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. all produced by IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Capture a variety of opinions in the 2020 U.S. presidential race. Reuters news agency spoke to 42 women in 12 states. Arizona, Florida, Nevada, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, Ohio, Nebraska, and Indiana. But voters swung for and against Donald Trump. Some once stalwart Republicans told Reuters they had, for the first time, crossed party lines to vote for Joe Biden. Some were young, first-time voters, selecting Biden only because they saw the alternative as far worse. Others, whether Republican or Democrat, said they had never liked or voted for Trump. We have prepared for you an article written jointly by Michael Rosenberg, Gabriella Porter, PJ Hofstadter, Mimi Dwyer, and Chris Kahn. The piece is titled, I Just Couldn't Be Silent, How American Women Decided 2020 Presidential Race. The article has been taken from the Reuters news agency. Please stay with us for more. Grace Vidalas, 82-year-old mother, had been a fan of President Donald Trump since his days hosting the reality TV show The Apprentice. She enthusiastically voted for Trump in 2016. But in the first weeks of the coronavirus pandemic, as the two watched daily White House briefings, Vidalas' mum, Grace Weber, voiced her first doubts. Vidala, a 48-year-old home care nurse, recalled Weber asking, why isn't he listening to the medical experts? Weeks later, Weber landed in the hospital with a gastrointestinal bleed. She soon contracted the coronavirus, spending nearly a month on a ventilator. In May, Vidala said goodbye to Weber over FaceTime, clutching her mother's rosary beads. Vidala, who lives in a suburb of Scranton, Pennsylvania, had been a Republican all her life. But she concluded, Trump lacked the integrity and trustworthiness and responsibility she was raised to value, and she wanted him out. She became a prominent booster of Trump's Democratic rival, even agreeing to appear in an online advertisement for former Vice President Joe Biden's campaign. She said, I just couldn't be silent on this one. I let my mum's voice be heard. Women appear to have been crucial in delivering the U.S. presidency to Joe Biden. They were at the forefront of the highest U.S. voter turnout in at least a century, casting ballots at higher rates than men. And according to exit polls from Edison research firm, more than half of female voters, 56%, chose the former vice president compared to 48% of men. Media outlets called the race for Joe Biden on Saturday after he pulled ahead decisively in Pennsylvania. It wasn't just women who carried Biden. Donald Trump lost ground among male voters in 2020 compared to 2016, but key to Joe Biden's success were his gains among white college-educated women in battleground states, women like Vidala, who turned out in high numbers than for Trump's Democratic rival Hillary Clinton 4 years ago. African-American women, and to a lesser degree, Latinas, supported Biden's bid for the White House over Trump by white majorities nationally, and more so than African-American and Latino men. Trump has not conceded the race, even as Biden's lead in the vote tally rises. Recounts appear likely in states where the margin is narrow, but Donald Trump would need to overturn the results in at least three states to prevail. Trump's court battles, too, are widely seen as unlikely to change the outcome of the elections. Trump's difficulties in appealing to women voters long predate this election and the pandemic. Accusations of sexual harassment and assault have dogged him for years. The day after Trump's 2017 inauguration, hundreds of thousands of people protested his election in a women's march in Washington, D.C. and other cities around the country. Still, Donald Trump held strong with one female demographic across both elections, white women without college degrees, including some of Vidal's relatives in Pennsylvania. To capture a variety of opinions in the 2020 race, Reuters news agency spoke to 42 women in 12 states. Arizona, Florida, Nevada, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, Ohio, Nebraska, and Indiana, where voters swung for and against Donald Trump. Some once stalwart Republicans told Reuters they had, for the first time, crossed party lines to vote for Joe Biden. Some were young, first-time voters, selecting Biden only because they saw the alternative as far worse. Others, whether Republican or Democrat, said they had never liked or voted for Donald Trump. Among Trump supporters, some women were fans whose votes and organizing on his behalf helped him to outperform expectations in several states. Regardless of their differences, many women threw themselves into political activism for the first time during this presidential campaign. Biden backers said in interviews that they were motivated by back-to-back crises of the past year, including the coronavirus pandemic, economic turmoil, and widespread protests against racism and police brutality. Paula McCabe, a 44-year-old of Williamsport, Pennsylvania, who lost her job at a coffee shop equipment manufacturer during the pandemic, said she was more motivated than ever before to vote this year. Paula McCabe, who voted for Joe Biden, said, "I've never been through an election that literally meant the entire country was going to crash and burn or finally thrive." She added, "This to me is probably the most important vote I've ever been alive for." Women in the United States have in many ways bore the brunt of the coronavirus pandemic and its economic fallout. According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, they have left the labor force at starkly higher rates than men as they juggle homeschooling duties and childcare. According to Washington, D.C.-based Center for Economic and Policy Research, those able to stay employed are more often working frontline jobs, especially in medicine or social services. Reuters polling before the election showed COVID-19, the disease that has killed more than 245,000 Americans this year, was a dominant issue for all voters, but more so for women. The Edison voter exit poll said 52% of women voters said that Joe Biden would be better at dealing with the coronavirus, compared with 44% who thought the same of Trump. But views on how much the coronavirus mattered to their vote were starkly divided along political lines. 24% of Biden voters said it was the issue that mattered most to them, compared to 5% of Donald Trump supporters. The fear of COVID-19 was ever present for Denise Calloway in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, after she lost several friends to the disease. But her primary motivation for voting was different: the chance to elect Kamala Harris as the first female, an African-American, vice president. Denise Calloway, 64-year-old, said she cried when Biden announced Harris as his running mate. Calloway, a retired public relations executive and consultant, connected with the Biden campaign in Wisconsin through friends at her black sorority. She began canvassing by phone and participated in weekly Zoom prayer circles with other volunteers. Black women, who overwhelmingly vote Democratic and at higher rates than black men, were never big Trump supporters. But Reuters polling showed they grew increasingly critical of the president this year. According to the Edison data, 91% of black women supported Joe Biden, 11 percentage points more than black men. Racial justice issues were important to voters overall. More than half of all voters and 87% of Biden voters said they had a favorable view of the Black Lives Matter movement. These activists helped launch national protests after the killing of George Floyd, a black man, by white police officers in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Calloway and her husband raised their son and two daughters, now adults, in Milwaukee County, one of the few that went for Clinton in 2016 when Donald Trump won Wisconsin by under 23,000 votes, in part by citing decades of lost manufacturing jobs. Calloway, the daughter of an auto executive, says Trump has broken promises to bring manufacturing jobs to Rust Belt states. This year, Biden flipped Wisconsin back by almost as narrow a margin as Trump won it in 2016, unless a recount changes the result, which rarely happens in U.S. elections. Nationally, Biden overwhelmingly won the support of young people as a whole, gaining the votes of 62% of 18 to 29-year-olds. Young Latina voter Yasmin Sagastume grew up in Phoenix, Arizona, the youngest of five children born to a mother from Mexico and a father from Guatemala. Now in college, she became politically active whilst in high school. Sagastume said she is not a big Biden fan. She supported the progressive Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders in the Democratic primaries and relates much more to 31-year-old New York Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez than a white male. Nevertheless, for months she made calls to young Hispanic voters encouraging them to vote. She said, "We're just trying to get Trump out, and that's the only goal." As the campaign progressed, personal collections frayed in a deeply divided country. According to a Reuters Ipsos Election Day poll, a fifth of American voters said they stopped talking to a family member or lost a friend because of the election. Denise Alton, a 46-year-old retired social worker who lives outside Raleigh, North Carolina, said her husband revealed on their anniversary that he had voted for Trump. Having worked with disabled people, she was upset after overhearing her husband's family, also Trump supporters, making fun of Biden's stutter. She says she found Trump's views and treatment towards women degrading. Oton, which was raised in a Republican household but diverged from her roots when she attended a liberal arts college, she campaigned for Barack Obama. But never before has she been as passionate about politics. She had her Trump-supporting husband drive her around the country to put out Biden-Harris signs and, with her daughter, wrote postcards to encourage people to vote. More than half of college-educated white women in North Carolina, like Alton, voted for Joe Biden, whilst their support for Donald Trump dropped 8 percentage points compared to 2016. Even among rural women, one of Trump's strongest base of support in 2016, the president saw his margins shrink. According to Edison exit polling, nationally, Donald Trump won 54% of the U.S. rural vote, 7 points less than in 2016. Slightly more than half of rural women supported Joe Biden this year. One was Rebecca Seidel, a 37-year-old who runs a small sustainable dairy farm in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, with her husband. For most of her life, her views hewed closely to her Republican father's. But after Donald Trump was elected in 2016, Seidel left the Republican Party and registered as a Democrat, partly because of what she saw as rising racism and Trump's protectionist trade policies. In the 2020 campaign, Seidel's concerns kicked into high gear when she and her entire family contracted COVID-19. She said her mom was hospitalized for 4 days, and Seidel lost her sense of smell and taste, crimping her plans to open a small cheese-making business. At a local farm supply store recently, she noticed a group of men chatting as they bagged up animal feed. None wore face masks, a sign to her that some in her community weren't taking the pandemic seriously enough. Seidel said It's become a political statement, adding, some people believe if you wear a face mask, you're not for Trump. Donald Trump has long commanded a strong following among white evangelical Christian voters, and according to Edison, 76% of them voted for him this time around. But that is 4 percentage points less than in 2016. Trump also lost Hyla Winters' vote. Winters, a 71-year-old, a devout evangelical and regular attendee of a Las Vegas megachurch, voted for Donald Trump in 2016, but over time she became disheartened by his attacks on the purported enemies. Winters, a retired college administrator, said, "His behavior is appalling. It's embarrassing. While she has not embraced the entire Democratic platform, she supported Joe Biden in presidential elections. She had been somewhat supportive of Trump's plan to build a wall on the U.S.-Mexico border, but was horrified by his zero-tolerance policy in which young migrant children were forcibly separated from their parents. She went online to find ways to get more involved politically, eventually finding a YouTube video on how to create a blog. In February, she started one, naming it NotTrump.net. As the protests against police brutality broke out, she reached out to a black friend to learn more about what it's meant to have white privilege. Winter said, "She gave me some homework, including some books and online resources. During early voting, she volunteered for 7 days at a voting site to answer questions and direct people to open booths. However, she got some bad news on Wednesday, 4th of November. She tested positive for COVID-19. She had been wearing a face mask under an outdoor tent, but she said some voters had no face coverings. Her husband, a Trump supporter, also tested positive. Whilst neither have serious symptoms, they now have to quarantine together." Hyla Winters said maybe they will have more time to resolve some of their political differences.
The U.S. President Donald Trump's refusal to concede power has sparked transition sabotage fears. Leaders on the world stage have also been on the loss as to whether to congratulate the president-elect Joe Biden or not. In this edition of the debate, we will look at Joe Biden's foreign policy directives and scrutinize how world leaders have reacted to his election, and whether, based on this reaction, there will be inroads against Trump's previous decisions. First, let's cross on over to Miami. Our correspondent Ronnie Curbelo joins us to get an update on America and Americans. Ronnie Curbelo, Miami is, or Florida is the place that Trump won. What type of mood is there prevailing there right now? And what do people think about Trump's moves to press forward with pressing his election fraud claims and trying to get something out of that?
Well, in Florida, nobody talks about elections anymore. It's part of the past. I can't say that it's a topic, at least it's a top topic of discussion in the state of Florida. Now, the Floridians are spectators, waiting for what happens. Of course, that a lot of can happen and nothing can happen at the same time. Because, as you know, as you just said, that Donald Trump is going to step in what the media has said, that he lost the election and the president-elect is Biden, despite many, many, I have a big list here of senators, governors, former governors, even former presidents from the Republican Party congratulating in accepting the victory of Biden. But nothing can happen, actually. I'll say that Trump, he has until January 20 in order to accept leaving the House, the White House. Because as you know, by December 11 is when the county needs to stop. December 14 is when the delegates, the electoral delegates, needs to cast the votes. And then on January 6th, on a mixed session between Senate and the Congress, the lower house, need to count the votes and declare the winner. After that is when is officially Biden or not, as right now Biden, will be elected, the elected president. So far on the media, with the tradition, is nothing new. It's something that we are used to, that the media is the one who declares the president when they find out that there is no way that the other candidate can surpass the numbers of electoral votes. And then on the noon, 12 o'clock noon on January 20, is the time where Donald Trump must have to leave the House, the White House. And then after that, if he insists to continue the White House, then comes other measures that we don't know that, because never happened. So it'll be the first time if something so weird happened in this in the United States.
Indeed. Thank you very much for that. Ronnie Corbello there, talking to us, a correspondent from Miami. Let me introduce Senior Analyst, Foreign Policy and Focus, Ian Williams, who joins us from New York. Ian Williams, welcome. So you're there in New York, and we're looking at somewhat of uncharted territory here. There should be an acknowledgement of the U.S. president-elect, but yet you're not getting that in the way that it should from the opposing party, and that would be the Republicans. What are your views, first of all, as to how this has gone down and transpired?
I don't think it's over till the fat golfer sings. I really don't. I think he is a person of infinite resource and cunning and tenacity, and he will try to hang on under all circumstances. The thing now is he's on his own. He was always a one-man band. He was a unique character in that sense. And most of his allies are changing their minds. They are realizing how bad it will make them look. The rest of the world, the allies, are beginning to accept and acknowledge Biden, and they're really not going to go in the face of it, because it was a marginal thing, but Biden was clearly ahead in the popular vote, in the vote on the day, and all of the various counts. Not all of Trump's bluster couldn't alter that, and he concentrated on sort of denying and denigrating the incoming postal votes, which didn't make him look too good because he votes by post as well. But they wouldn't have made the difference in the end. So I think that was what turned it. If they thought there was a chance, they were joining him in frustrating the election and causing chaos. I don't think they think there's a chance, so they're not going to do it. But it's interesting to see the tone. I'm getting 4 emails an hour almost since Saturday, inviting me to contribute towards the fight back, the defend democracy, the defend our votes campaign from the Trump camp. And it's interesting, until Friday night, they were basically enumerating why they wanted you to and what they were accusing the Democrats of. But since Saturday morning, they haven't said what it is they're defending. They haven't said what it is they're accusing the Democrats of doing. They're saying radical leftist Democrats are trying to steal the election. They don't say how. They don't say what. But they're asking for money. And if you burrow down onto the donations, it says 50% of that money will go towards retiring Trump's campaign debt. And the rest will go. They haven't got the lawyers lined up, and so they can't even spend the 50%. I mean, Giuliani is cheap and comes cheap. They don't have to raise a lot of money to get Giuliani. He does it for free because he gets a frisson out of being abused, I think. But the other lawyers they get they know that Trump bilks people. They know that Trump will not pay them as he inevitably loses. Uh-huh. So they're not stepping up. And the campaign debt is a very serious issue for them. He is coming out here, and as far as we know, he has huge business debts. He has huge personal debts. His empire of cards is about to fall down. He owes a lot of money on the campaign, where he spent a lot of money and didn't raise that much. So he's in trouble. And I think maybe his sane half is talking to the other half, and the sane half is saying, let's make all this fuss and raise money, and we can pay off some of the campaign debt. But the other half is genuine. He doesn't really accept that he can lose. All How right. do you explain somebody going to play golf two mornings after the loss of an election? Doesn't go to his own press conference. He goes off and plays golf. This either sends a signal of complete disdain to the electorate or a complete disconnect from reality. He really says, well, doesn't worry me. I haven't lost the election. I'm going to go ahead and play golf. So, yours. Is it signaling? It's difficult to tell. This man is completely unpredictable. And, you know, the normal political analyses don't really stand because we're talking about a very erratic, mentally unstable yes. person.
Now, this is the part that gets kind of tricky and somewhat consequential and somewhat dangerous based on many who have said that, first of all, there have been threats by Trump supporters in terms of the backlash, that they're going to do this or that, and it's going to involve violence. At the same time, we're looking at a very polarized, obviously, America, and Americans from both sides of the aisle here are not too keen on each other. And this is where it comes into the dangerous territory. At least it seems that way. Is there a chance that this is going to lead down that path where you have Trump supporters and Biden supporters perhaps clashing? Where there have been some instances of that happening already?
I was very worried about this on Friday and Saturday. I think the moment has passed. If he can't raise the, you know, if he can't get the peasants out there with their pitchforks and torches on the Saturday and Sunday when this all happened, I don't think he's going to do it today. And the lackluster press conference that stage managed by Giuliani is not going to inspire anybody.
Okay.
Even his devoted supporters must be scratching their heads and saying, okay, well, they've stolen it fair and square now, and there's not much we can do about it. But right. I still have that saving reservation. This man is totally erratic, and there's no telling what he might do. And some of his supporters are clearly dingbat crazy, and there's no telling what they will do if they're odd.
All right, great. Let me bring in Scott Bennett. Scott Bennett is joining us from San Francisco, political analyst. Scott Bennett, welcome. Let's move on now. We're going to find out, obviously, what Trump is going to be up to soon.
Good to be with
let's
you.
Move on to some foreign policy initiatives that perhaps can come into play. When we take a look at Iran, Iran has come out and said, obviously, there's no possibility on renegotiating the Iran nuclear deal, but Biden and his team have said, based on some news sources, that they are going to seek to re-enter the Iran nuclear deal within months, which sounds pretty quick. How do you see it?
Well, I think, first of all, Joe Biden has been supported by Bibi Netanyahu now, and Bibi Netanyahu has recognized Biden and Harris as somehow being president and vice president before all of the legal battles and the election votes are counted. I've always prescribed and thought Donald Trump is trying to make a right turn out of the problems that he's fallen into because of poor advisors with regards to Iran. And I don't think he has any intention of engaging in conflict with Iran. And I think it's only a matter of time before he does not make a new deal, not engage in any pressure campaign, but probably will dust off the old Iran deal and enter into a new one. So I don't have any feelings that he's going to be going into a direction of conflict, nor do any of the people that work in the intelligence circles that I've talked with. I would say, however, that, you know, the comments by your other guests calling people dingbat crazy because they don't support what seems to be increasingly fraudulent, manipulated ballot harvested election where all of the legal evidence and the witness testimony and the whistleblowers who have been working in these agencies will testify to, and these will be federal crimes that most likely will be prosecuted. I think it's the epitome of arrogance, which typically comes out of the deep state sort of illuminated class of political consultants and academics who've never served in government or been in the military. That's quintessentially characteristic for what this gentleman is trying to say, and I use that term advisedly. I think this is going to be a potential civil war, but not started by the right, not started by Donald Trump supporters, but started by the fanatical lunatic left that have been burning down cities and engaging in some of the worst examples of domestic terrorism ever seen. So it's not the right, it's not Donald Trump supporters, it's the left that carry madness, and the reason they're trying to push Biden in now is to inflate the bubble of their madness so that they can pop it, and in that explosion, try and launch a civil war in America, where Americans will have to defend against that left.
I knew when we got into this debate, we couldn't escape this topic at hand, but I got to give, obviously, Ian Williams a chance to answer back there. Go ahead, Ian Williams.
I can't defend myself on this program. You have heard me week after week denouncing Joe Biden. You've heard me week after week talking about what scurrilous people the Clintons are. I'm an equal opportunities finger pointer. And when I say dingbats, I say people who turn up armed to the teeth at town halls trying to intimidate voters and officials are dingbat crazy. And I don't care whether they have Trump on their hats or Biden on their hats. It's just I haven't seen many people carrying semi-automatic weapons with Biden stickers on. They've all been Trump supporters. I'm not even saying all Trump supporters are dingbat crazy. I'm saying that a very significant and dangerous proportion of them have been demonstrably crazy.
Who burned down the
cities? They turn up on the street waving guns. In fact, a lot of the burning, as we have seen, if you look at the newspapers, if you read the indictments, was far-right people trying to sow problems. But let's get back to the foreign policy. Biden's foreign policy is not that much different from Trump's overall. He supports Israel. The problem is that he supports the loonies in Israel. He supports the Sheldon Adelson and the far-right Likud, the millennialists and the Apocalypse Now people. He wants, as a lot of, let's say, sensible right-wing Zionists do, is a two-state solution, which he knows the Trump deal will negate and make impossible. They also want the Iran nuclear deal because it takes Iran nuclear weapons off the table. That's what sensible Israelis want. That's what Biden wants. And it so happens to coincide with what Iran is saying and what Iran wants and what the rest of the world wants. So here we have a clear distinction between the crazies who have been going along with Trump and foreign policy field and the sane, rational, connected to reality people, the rest of the world, every other country in the world, and a lot of the significant proportion of the Israeli political class want the Iranian nuclear deal to be reinstated. And the question is, can Biden just take a tip from Trump? I hope he can.
Okay.
And just issue executive decrees reversing what Trump has been doing.
All right, Scott Bennett, so you can have half your question, a rebuttal to what Ian Williams there said, and the other half will move to, if you don't mind, I'm going to forge it into one question, about China, who has declined to formally recognize Biden, along with Russia, I must say, in terms of the win. And tell us what you think Russia and China, how Biden will be dealing with it. Go ahead.
Well, I think China is certainly happy and clapping their hands together in quiet silence, but they have to put up a good front for their token agent who received millions of dollars and their pornography-addicted son who was that agent. So China is really the sleeping giant that is happiest with Joe Biden because he's their puppet. He's their man. There's also been examples of all sorts of new charges and investigations into that. Russia, I think, is really a more of an astute statesman sort of country. So I think they're doing what should be done. And Netanyahu is a traitor, and he's just simply pissed off at Trump because Trump refused to bomb Iran. And that's why Netanyahu is now moving against Trump. But ultimately, it's going to come down to the analysis of the evidence and the facts and the ballots and the supercomputer hammer that naval intelligence people have been telling me have been used for multiple operations overseas, but now we've seen them multiply operated here against the United States domestic elections. So yes, in one sense, it's very ironic that what we've done to other countries has been done to us. Michigan and Wisconsin were winning for Trump, and then suddenly the votes were turned off, the machines were turned off, and then at 4 a.m., 4 hours later, he was hundreds of thousands of votes ahead of Trump. That's impossible. The statistical impossibility of this vote points to the very real probability of a civil war if the left try and do a coup d'etat. So this is why Americans are very, very upset. And ironically, it gives a chance for Iran and other nations that have legitimate grievances against the United States and have legitimate angers against the assassination of General Soleimani and people like that. Iran has been fighting on the right side by defending civilized free people from ISIS and the Wahhabi lunatics. By the way, the Antifa Black Lives Matter manuals on how to sow social chaos and destruction are written in Arabic, not Persian, Arabic, Wahhabi language. That tells you a lot of what the domestic terrorists are. They're not Iranians. They're from the Arabic description. That's why they're written in that language.
Okay.
So I think we're seeing the real issues, and I do have confidence that the legal statutes and systems of the United States are going to prevail, and you are going to see evidence coming out in the next coming weeks which will indicate Donald Trump won the election and it was tried to be fraudulently stolen, at which case the left will go into panic and fury mode, and they'll claim what Rumpelstiltskin, the agent provocateur of the deep state on the other side of the camera, is saying, and that is, oh, the right is stealing this election. No, right. The left tried to steal it, they got caught, they got shut down, and now they're going to be imprisoned, and that's why they're running.
Well, you talked about Saudi Arabia, I'm assuming, as one of those Arab countries.
Your companion there, for months before the election, the pundits, the academics, the politicians all said,
I don't want to hear your propaganda. I want to hear a question from the host, not from you, not your show, the host. So be quiet. Go ahead, sir.
Tried to sabotage the U.S. Postal Service.
Ian Williams, for the sake of...
He appointed a saboteur in charge of the
postal
service.
Be quiet, Englishman. Go ahead.
Right up to the end, they were sabotaging the machines, the postal service.
Let's move on. I got 2 minutes left.
Specifically to stop postal vote getting in, because he knew it would come against
this.
So he constantly starts shouting statistical impossibility after they start.
All right, we're talking over each other. Let me address this question, Ian Williams, because we're running out of time. Talked about Arabs there, our guest, Scott Bennett. I have to talk about Saudi Arabia. If Iran and the U.S. were to, again, big if, to go back into this JCPOA, how do you think Saudi Arabia would react to this? Because obviously, based on the previous count of how the JCPOA went down, they weren't too happy.
I think America is done with Saudi
This will be for
Arabia.
Ian Williams. I'm sorry, Scott Bennett. Go ahead, Ian Williams. Go ahead.
The Saudis will be very upset by it. They'll be very upset that Trump has gone. It's even possible the Democrats might say to them, excuse me, you can't go around dismembering journalists and putting them through meat grinders. It's an outside possibility. But I do believe it really depends to be how... It's difficult to see how it's going to shake down. Because in the end, some combination of Israeli... how should we say, centrist opinion, and the Saudis will work on Biden. I do believe he is committed. Obama's was committed because it was his trademark deal to the JCPOA. So I think that is going to go in. And the Saudis will either decide that they have to accommodate with it, because in the end, they've got money, they've got big checks, but they don't have the military. They don't have the diplomatic force that the United States has allowed them to get away with things like this for a while. So I really think that the Biden people will have shown no compunction at all. The Democrats in general at that level have shown no compunction in going along with bloodthirsty dictators when it suits political ends. And this is no exception. They'll go along with the Saudis.
Final question to you, Scott Bennett. Won't be a question, just your views in less than a minute. Go ahead.
Well, I think Biden is a puppet and really a dead man walking who doesn't have any of the mental clarity required of a president.